And welcome to the Luminaries In and Out of Sect podcast, a show about the sun and how astrologers embody and relate to it. My name is SP Hall, and I'm your host. In today's episode on the Capricorn Sun, as a luminary out of sect, I speak with the astrologer, archivist, and podcast host, Ellie Higgins. I'm really excited to be dropping the next episode of this new sun series, which will continue for the next year. For new listeners, please go back and listen to the moon series that I've been doing over the last year, where I spoke to different astrologers about their moon sign. This Capricorn Sun episode was particularly important for me, as I also have the Capricorn Sun as my luminary out of sect. So I was really excited for this conversation. Ellie has a great podcast called Stargaze, the Queer Astrology Archives podcast. And just like this series I'm doing, he will be following the sun over the next year and doing episodes that highlights a famous person with that sun sign. He's just released the first episode of that series where he talks about Susan Sontag, a writer and intellectual that we talk a little bit about in both Capricorn Sun episodes. She wrote one of my favorite books of essays that I found actually before I became a student of astrology, which has the auspicious title, Under the Sign of Saturn. The book contains an essay with the same name that's about one of the most important thinkers of the 20th century, Walter Benjamin, and his offbeat, melancholic nature and Saturnian ways of thinking. This man intentionally subscribed to older ways of thought and comportment, shunning the fashions of his time. I provided a link to that book, as well as Ellie's podcast, in the show notes, so please give it a listen. As always, if you enjoy the work that I'm doing, please contribute to the podcast sustainability by becoming a supporting member or offering a one-time donation on my website. There you can also find information on my services. I'm offering natal and timing consultations, as well as answering horary questions. I hope you enjoy the conversation. All right, Eli Higgins, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm doing pretty well. It's that interesting time of year, Capricorn season, where it's January 8th around 6 p.m. Eastern time for those interested in the data. We're like getting, you know, it's that first Monday, I think, after the new year, maybe. Yeah. After New Year's Day, and like we're slowly but surely kind of getting back into the swing of things. And as we're both Capricorn suns, we're also like going into this new solar year, this new kind of astrological year. And I'm definitely seeing a change in my kind of experience already, even though it's been, you know, my birthday was about 2 weeks ago. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what this year brings. How have things been for you? How has the astrology been for you lately?
It's been all right. It's been, I'm about a week out from my birthday, so I'm still kind of wrapping up, my solar year, kind of catching some of the ends of some big transit. So I just had like the final hit of Saturn conjunct my ascendant ruler last week, and my exact nodal reversal. So kind of like these like big transits that haven't totally like played out fully. And I'm kind of just in, I guess, a moment of like, I'm wrapping up one chapter of my life, and I like, yeah, I'm looking ahead to next week, and you know what my like solar return chart looks like, and looks a little nicer than the one that I am currently in, so I'm very much looking forward to that. Yes,
that's super exciting. And did you say that you're in a sun perfection year this year?
I'm in a Capricorn, so I'm in a Saturn perfection year.
Yes. Cool. So your sun is kind of being activated by perfection.
Yes.
As well. Interesting. All right. Wonderful. Eli, can you give us just an introduction to yourself and your astrological practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Ellie Higgins, and I am an astrologer. Outside of astrology, I am a trained massage therapist. But in terms of astrology, I started studying in 2019. And I'm kind of, in the generation of people who are learning from the generation who started in modern and went Hellenistic. So, Chris Brennan, Dimitri George, Kelly Surtees. And I've also done some studying with Michael J. Morris and Amy Green. And then just recently completed some electional studies with Kira Ryberg.
Oh, wonderful.
That she's excellent. And yes, I do consultations and spend a lot of time right now working on a podcast about queer history and astrology. And in general, I'm interested in queer art and queer political history and the archives and all of the places that those things interact. And looking at that through the lens of astrology.
That's amazing. I'm just curious to get your take. I'm not sure if that you've talked about this on your podcast, but what do you think it is about, like, queerdom, for lack of a better word, that astrology is so popular within the queer or queer communities?
It's interesting. I think it has to do with a like the way that astrology kind of offers a level of connection to a like greater universe. Like I guess in terms of how I understand my queerness, it is like all in context. And a large part of it has been about understanding how different systems of power and structures are related and playing out together. And so I think like and and kind of the more negative way, but and also in the more positive way of like how we are all interdependent and like need each other and need community and need an earth that is thriving and all of these different things to like survive and thrive. And I think that astrology kind of offers a way to connect into one particular piece of that, which is like connecting with the universe and connecting with a like huge, like big picture frame. And I guess that is how I have understood it. I don't know if you have thoughts about it. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, no, I don't have like super formulated thoughts. I think kind of what I've thought about it is in alignment with what you're talking about. So yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying, or it feels resonant for me. I think that yeah, there's something about like queerness doesn't perhaps doesn't need to be a marginal experience, but I think that there's something about that Aquarian kind of thing of like being on the margins and being able to see the larger context and anything that can kind of help you understand why you might be put in that position and how you can navigate it effectively. You can kind of like navigate society in kind of a queer way, for lack of a better explanation, like a way that uses like this system of power and potentially oppression to your advantage and the advantage of your loved ones who share your identity, I think is like, it's like a beneficial thing. Which it's interesting thinking about. It kind of reminds me of the debate that sometimes happens in astrological communities about like whether astrology should be mainstreamed or it should be something that's kind of maintained as this kind of esoteric thing, like at the margins, so that it can be used. It's kind of like people who are like, oh, who poo-poo it, astrology, is kind of like, okay, go ahead, like I'll utilize the tools and
you know, have that relationship with it so that people like me can get the benefit and you can continue to downplay it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't actually need everyone involved.
Right. Yeah. Like not everything is for everyone.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. Being someone that's like started to study astrology in 2019, you know, like what was your relationship to the sun before you became astrologer? Like, were you at all interested in sun sign astrology? Being a fellow Capricorn sun night chart, did you identify? Like, I didn't identify very heavily as a Capricorn. I didn't really want to, because it felt like there was an image of Capricorn that felt very kind of like sterile in a way. And that was not really what I wanted to be or identified with. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just curious, like, to hear more about your experience of that.
Yeah, definitely. I would not say that I particularly identified with being a Capricorn sun for most of my life. And I think I wasn't super into astrology. I was neither very into astrology, nor was I like, that's fake, before getting into astrology. I think I just sort of was like, I have no interest in it. But yeah, I think like in part because, you know, the image of Capricorn that gets kind of put in the sun sign astrology realm is like the capitalist, the businessman, super serious, hardworking, which just was not me. Like, kind of in thinking about what we were just talking about being in the margins or not, like I was very much kind of like an obviously queer child, I think, to most of the people around me and to myself as well early on. And so I was, you know, not like trying or pretending to be a like functioning member of society in a like stereotypical Capricorn way. And so I think I was just sort of like, that doesn't resonate at all, and that's not who I am. But I think, you know, kind of looking back on it, I was definitely doing a lot of like Capricorn sun things. Like, I was a very serious child and like would just take everything very seriously. I was like not a like light, easygoing, I'll do whatever kind of kid. I definitely was not a super social kid. You know, I had some friends, but I like have become more and more social as I've gotten older. And I also played classical music very seriously for the first like 19 years of my life. So starting from like my parents are both musicians, so they, you know, I started like five learning piano. But when I was 12, I started playing trumpet very seriously. And then was like going to music school like every Saturday for all of high school. And then I went to college for music for a little bit. And it's interesting, you know, like trumpet is kind of, I think, more associated with jazz and improv and even like kind of like funk and pop. And that was just like not at all what I was trying to do with it. I was like, I'm going to grow up, I'm going to play in an orchestra, I'm going to sit in the back of the orchestra. We're going to play Beethoven, we're going to play Mozart, like, and I don't know, I was thinking about that in the context of preparing for this episode and was remembering at one of these, like, I went to a summer camp for classical music, and the trumpet teacher had all of us kind of like take turns doing improv, and basically like was really just like trying to like get us to like experiment and try new things. And like, mm-hmm. it was like totally like private, like no one was listening. Like we had headphones on, so like you couldn't even hear yourself play. Mm-hmm. But it was just like, just play something, just do anything, just improv. And I was just like, oh my God, that's not at all what I want to do. I want to have someone else like write out the music and I will play it and I will follow the rules and I will like do that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think I like was a very like Capricorn sun child, but I didn't resonate, I guess, with the stereotype of it.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for explaining. It's really interesting to hear you talk about your experience. For those who are watching and listening, I suppose I'll just kind of explain a little bit of your chart. You have 0 degree Libra rising with the sun at 27 Capricorn, and then you also have the moon at 23 Sagittarius. So it's really interesting looking at your chart because there's like so much Jupiterian, Saturnian stuff that's going on. You have your ascendant ruler Venus in Pisces. You have the ruler of Pisces, Jupiter in Capricorn. Then you have the ruler of Capricorn, Saturn in Pisces, in this kind of dual, you know, Jupiter and Saturn are square but exchanging signs. So it's really like a heavily kind of Jupiter Saturn chart that you have. And immediately when you're talking about music, of course, I'm like looking at your fifth house of Aquarius, and you have your malefic out of sect there, Mars, which is the planet kind of action. And so I'm curious what you attribute like this desire for like I'm going to play classical music and rather than like I'm going to play the kind of popular new stuff. Do you attribute that to kind of like your Mars placement more so, or what comes to mind for you?
I haven't thought about it in terms of Mars, but I think that makes some sense to me. I think that I was like a pretty quiet kid, and I think that perhaps playing the trumpet was like a way that I like figured out how to be loud and how to be expressive. And yeah, I think that like it I think was pretty surprising to the people around me when I was like, that's the one that I want to play, you know, when you're in like whatever grade and they're like, you can choose these like five instruments, because I was so quiet and trumpet is kind of loud and brash. And I think probably in part it was Mars being in my fifth house. And yeah, just this like desire to like find a way to maybe get around some of the more like reserved Saturnian Capricorn energy and like use it as a tool to make some noise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think what you're speaking to a lot of is it's just really interesting the aversions that signs can have when they border each other in particular. And I think Chris Brennan and other people have talked about that as like there's a corrective function. So there's like the corrective function of Cancer, of Capricorn, I'm sorry, following Sag, and then of Aquarius following Capricorn. And it's really interesting when, you know, you have these two Saturnian signs of Capricorn and Aquarius, but they're very different. You know, Capricorn is an earth sign and Aquarius is an air sign. So Capricorn is more associated with perhaps material things. There's like an internality with it. And then the air is visible, and Aquarius has all these connotations of like the outsider, the kind of weirdo, the alien, that kind of thing. And so it's just really interesting to hear you kind of communicate like about the ways that your Mars in Aquarius is trying to kind of like, maybe not compensate, but like differentiate in a way from your, you know, the Capricorn placements that you have.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Which I think speaks to my experience of growing up and reading Capricorn horoscopes and being like, I don't really want this because I'm a Sag rising and I have Mars and the moon in Sag. And so with that place being associated with my identity and then my sun being in the second in Capricorn, there's kind of like, you know, an understandable, I think, rejection, given the kind of differentiation between Capricorn and Sagittarius.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And so what does the sun mean to you astrologically? I would love to hear some of your thoughts on like how the sun shows up in your practice today, because what I think I'm trying to do with this series is, you know, hopefully not like too obnoxiously or what have you, but it's like, I think the sun has like, is such an important planet in astrology and, but has gotten distorted or put in a certain place by like modern sun sign astrology. And I'm trying to like return the sun or explore how the sun can be like put back in its proper place, so to speak. So yeah. I'm really interested to hear of people's thoughts on it and how they use it in their practice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sun sign astrology and like, you know, newspaper horoscope astrology has made it, I think, actually kind of hard to figure out how to use the sun. And I don't know, I'm thinking about there's that Theodore Adorno essay where he's like comparing like newspaper horoscopes and like the rise of fascism. I'm gonna like really butcher the like premise of the essay, but like basically like the idea being like, well, if you put people into these like basic categories, like that's bad. Which, you know, obviously we know is not actually what we are doing as astrologers. But I think that like the sun getting kind of used in that way, like I know when I was like initially kind of learning about astrology, I was like, all right, well, you know, fuck the sun. Like I want to learn about all this other like more interesting stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess the way that I think about the sun is kind of like the platonic ideal of your purpose. Like it's not something that is real or tangible, but I almost think about it like if like the word was like written out and in the sky by like a plain skywriter, like that's like whatever word that is the sun. And you know, you can't ever like touch it, but you spend your whole life kind of creating imitations of it, which are of course shaped by, you know, the sign and the position of the house that your sun is in. And I think about it like in contrast to the moon. You know, obviously we also can't touch the moon, but astronauts have landed on the moon. And so it is, I think, a little bit more touchable and tangible in a way that the sun isn't. You know, like we're not sending astronauts to the sun for good reason. Yeah, and I think also just like this reflected in how like the moon changes size and shape constantly, both with the moon cycle, but also just like there are times where the moon looks really huge in the sky and times where it looks really far away. And by contrast, the sun is a lot more unchangeable in size and shape. So I often think about the sun as like the idea of the thing that you're trying to do or to be in a very kind of abstract sense, which I think is why it's so easy to generalize with it, but then does make it hard to actually get to the, like a true, I guess, useful understanding of it for our purposes.
Yeah, we benefit from the consequence of the sun's existence, but we can't have in some ways that direct relationship, that tangible relationship with the sun that we can have with the moon. I was just watching the news today, and NASA is like expanding private companies' capabilities of doing like aeronautic kind of things. And so there was a company that was launching a lunar rover. And yeah, I think, you know, I don't know the science behind it, but we can't launch like a solar rover. We can't really actually, like, it's kind of incredible that we are where we are in the solar system, because we're in this like Goldilocks spot where life can exist and it's like not too hot or too cold. But, you know, things, if we sent life towards the sun, it would die well before it got there, not just because of like the distance between the Earth and the sun, but by this, the sheer heat. So yeah, there is this kind of like untouchable element to the sun, which feels interesting in just my own experience of doing this series compared to the moon series. I feel like, and maybe it was just the newness to me of having a podcast and, you know, what have you, or just my personal relationship with like having the moon in my first, but it felt very, very intimate and very tangible. And that's definitely happened in the conversations with the sun, but there's also been an element of it feeling harder and feeling more elusive in a way. And like you said, I do think that there is kind of a, not like a fuck you element to the sun, but like people seem to love the moon, and then the sun, it's like this thing you need, but not necessarily this thing that you always want, perhaps.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I feel like, I mean, I imagine part of it is we both are night charts, and so there's like some level on which I certainly feel ease with or like desire to connect to my Sag moon in a way that I don't with the sun. But I do think that, like, I mean, I think, like, you know, the split that gets made between like the mind and the body, where the sun gets associated with the mind and the moon gets associated with the body, like, you are in your body always, and like you're in your mind always too, and they are not actually separate. But I think that perhaps what's appealing about astrology in some ways is the pull to the body, in a world that can be very like mind centric. And so then trying to go back around and like pick up the mind again and bring it with you into the realm of astrology, for people who are going to astrology to access the body. I don't know, feels like,
yeah, no, that's I think a really important point, and is something that I see sometimes in like spiritual communities that I'm involved with, where there's this kind of complete denial of the ego. And if we associate the sun with the mind, we also associate it with like the ego, the individuality, the mechanism, which kind of like is there for our biological survival. And there's this desire to like smash the ego, or this desire of an ego death. But I think that that people can forget that, like, what the real function of the ego is, which is kind of a physical survival. And that it's not, I don't know, like I'm trying to, I guess I'll just speak in shoulds and needs or what have you for a moment, but it's like, it's not, the thing to do is not to try to live in the binary of the mind and body, but to have an integration between those things, and to put the ego in its proper place so that it serves its role rather than kind of taking over and running the show. So I think that that's a really important point, because it's not like we can just take the body and then not, you know, or take fate and not think about action and not think about free will. Like, we need to integrate those two things to have something that's holistic.
Yeah.
Amazing. So I'm sorry, did you have something to add?
Oh, I was just going to say thank you for saying what I was thinking in a beautiful way.
Thank you for that. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the sign of Capricorn and how consideration's a myth. And here I'm trying to kind of also expand our idea of myth, not necessarily being like Greek myth or Greek mythology, but like the human need for mythos, the human need for story, and how stories help our understanding of astrology, whether that be literature, film, what have you.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, one of the main things that I think about with Capricorn is actually its relationship to stories, and I guess to myth by way of like the canon. So I think one of the things that I have, you know, noticed in my own life and just kind of, you know, looking at other Capricorns is that there is often a like a deep relationship to the canon, whether that is like the canon of literature or music or, you know, whatever cultural thing. And, you know, I was kind of doing that, like in my example about classical music, of like, I was wanting to play the canon of, you know, like the quote greats of classical music. But I don't think that it necessarily, like, I don't think that Capricorns necessarily need to be kind of like reifying the canon, but I think that there is always this sense of being in relation to it. And so I don't know that I have like a specific myth of Capricorn, but I think that Capricorn is existing in relation to the kind of like larger social myths that create the structures, which I would say are like the canons of culture. And I don't know, I think like some of the other like Capricorn guests that you've had on the podcast, I think are like really good examples of that, actually. Like, I just got to listen to the first like couple of minutes of your episode with Oscar before hopping on here. But they're like really good at like citing all sorts of literature, and really good at quoting. And same with EY Washington. Like, they can just like pull out quotes. And I think for both of them, I mean, I don't want to speak for either of them, but I guess in listening to both of them, something that I was getting was this sense of like a deep knowledge of the stories and what has been written and what has been said, and like a capacity to cite all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't think that either of them is trying to like reify the canon, but like they are kind of like in relation to it, so they can like go to it and pull from it and kind of take it with them.
Yeah.
Like I'm thinking just about what EY says about like, I come from a lineage that spreads horizontally, like a sentence, yeah. Something like that.
That's exactly what they say, yeah.
And so I think that there's like, you know, it doesn't have to be like the sort of like vertical building, but there is a like relationship to the like stories that our culture is built on, whether you're working with it or working against it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it reminds me of this lecture I took with Diana Rose Harper about the first house and second house, I think. But she really broke down each, like the signs therein by their element and their quadruplicity and their planetary ruler. And, you know, if we think about Saturn and Capricorn, Saturn is old things. You know, so it's like a kind of knowledge of the things that have gone before in a certain way, whether that be, you know, books, film, what have you. And if we think of the Earth, we think of these like pieces that are discrete, tangible, that can be separated and, you know, kind of used to build. And then if we think of the cardinality of Earth that comes in Capricorn and Capricorn's association with, you know, again, not to fall into those stereotypes, but the kind of like, you know, the capitalist, or like, you know, the intrepid, the entrepreneur, what have you. I think there really is an urge to kind of, and I feel this most strongly, I think, with my Mercury in Capricorn, but to kind of like, know the rules so that you can break them, so to speak, or like to know the landscape so that you know what needs to be built and how to build that. And there is this element, I think, with Capricorn placements that really do want to kind of like build via ideas or build via, you know, whether it be more tangible things. And there is a real reference to that which has come before. So that feels very, you know, your description feels very resonant to me as well.
Yeah, I think that there's like the kind of like perhaps more negative stereotype of Capricorn being the like capitalist, like builder, like conservative, you know, like Saturn being associated with a more like conservative worldview. I think like the opposite to that is a like conservation or preservation kind of framework, where like, you know, it's not knowing the canon so you can keep doing the same old thing, but it's knowing it so you know where you've been, so you know like where you can go, where you haven't yet gone,
knowing the limitations of that corpus as well. Like, you know, why isn't Toni Morrison in it? Why aren't there queer authors in it? Why is it mostly, you know, dead white men? Exactly. To kind of quote the tired phrase, but why is that?
Yeah,
there's like a real limitation in that. And by knowing the limitation, you can, by knowing the problem, you know, I kind of talk about like the virtue of negative thinking in the episode with with Oscar, but it's like by knowing the problem, mm-hmm. by knowing what's not there, you can put what needs to be there there.
And I think that like the kind of more like conservation focused or preservation focused thing is like it's about knowing what's not there so you can know what and knowing what could be there. Mm-hmm. And also about like valuing the like life or the worth of the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, not to, because like, you know, Capricorn is not a fixed sign, so it's not like trying to fix something in time. Mm-hmm. And there is that like cardinal like need for like starting new things, but like it's just like rather than starting from scratch with no knowledge, which is, you know, maybe more the Aries way, mm-hmm. like starting from a place of like, I like, by looking back, I can see these things and I value and I respect these things. And so I'm going to like pull these things with me and release these other things, mm-hmm. To make space for, you know, if we're talking about the literary canon, like more Black authors, more queer authors, like more stories from different people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I strongly relate to that. Yeah, I'm curious if you have any additional thoughts about like Capricorn versus Aquarius, as well as like some of the images that get associated with these Saturnian signs, like the goat or the sea goat. Interested to hear your thoughts on those.
Yeah. I guess in terms of Capricorn versus Aquarius, both being Saturn ruled signs, I think like if and both being in opposition to the luminaries, if the luminaries represent like what we can see and therefore what we can know, and then Saturn and therefore Capricorn and Aquarius are like the limitations of what we can see and know. I kind of think about it like as if like Capricorn is kind of like the near side of Saturn. And I know that we're all turning. And so this doesn't totally astronomically make sense, but I think about Capricorn as like the near side of Saturn, and Aquarius as the far side of Saturn. So mm-hmm. with Capricorn, we are like looking to all that we already know, mm-hmm. the limitations of that. And with Aquarius, we are looking to all that we do not yet know, mm-hmm. And trying to figure out the limitations of that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the esoteric phrase for Capricorn, which I learned from Jeff Henshaw, who has a podcast, Cosmic Cousins. I don't spend a ton of time in like that world, but when he said it, it has kind of like stuck with me. So the esoteric phrase for Capricorn is lost am I in light supernal, yet on that light I turn my back. Which I did have to Google what supernal meant. It means like celestial or heavenly. Mm-hmm. But basically like the idea being like with Capricorn, and you know, with like the image of the sea goat, like we do get to go to the top of the mountain and to like get that the heavenly or the celestial light, the celestial knowledge. But we don't get to like go beyond that. We then have to turn around and kind of come back down the mountain and all the way like down into the, you know, depths of the sea. And so I see that as kind of like with Capricorn, there's this like reaching towards the like limits of knowledge, but ultimately, like, we have to return back to the earth with that, you know, sacred knowledge. Because there is, like, work that is earthly and material that we still have to do here.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting to hear your perspective on that and Capricorn's association with, like, the extremes of the earth. Because I've been kind of associating the sea goat with, like, that ability to go to the ocean depths and, like, gain the wisdom that's, like, deep in the earth, and then, like, bring it to the mountaintop. This kind of, like, go to the mountaintop and proclaim kind of thing. But it makes so much sense, like, this idea of going to the highest place, the extreme of the earth, to kind of, like, gain the wisdom of the sky. And then, like, yeah, what is the alchemy between these two kinds of knowledge, and how is that being used? Is it being used to benefit like the people in general? You know, I'm thinking of, like, Saturn's associations with, like, common people. And it's like, how is that wisdom that's gained from those extreme places being used to benefit, or, you know, what have you? And so, yeah, that's thought provoking. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I think it's interesting what you were saying about, like, you were thinking about it as kind of like going to the depths and getting to come back up and proclaim what you've learned. I think, like, that kind of speaks to what we were talking about earlier with the, like, split or not split between mind and body, of, like, there is something to be learned from going to the top of the mountains, and there is something to be learned from going to the bottom of the ocean. And you have to kind of be in that cycle where you are going up to the top of the mountain, proclaiming what you've learned from the bottom of the ocean, and also have to go to the top of the mountain and learn something there, and then bring that back down. And the part of the work is doing that kind of integration of the knowledge that you are getting in both places, and the, like, sharing of that knowledge with the common people.
Yeah, there's an interesting kind of, like, transfiguration, or, like, chameleon-esque aspect to Capricorn, I think, with, like, I think that there's a real need for, like, this movement between the goat and the sea goat. Like, there's something lost when the goat kind of loses its tail and is separated from, like, those sacred waters. But then I think there's something lost, like, if the tail is kind of a stand-in for legs, and it means, the tail means you can go to the bottom of the ocean, but you can't go to the mountaintop. There's this kind of need to regrow the tail and regrow the legs so that you can kind of move between these places. And that takes a real kind of, I don't know, some kind of mysterious magical element to do that.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about how we both have our sun in Capricorn and moon in Sag, and how both of those have these kind of, like, half, like, you know, Capricorn is half goat, half sea creature, and Sag is a centaur, so half human, half horse. And so with both of those, there is this kind of, like, mystical element. But also, like, it's not just one thing, and there is this need to kind of go different places in different ways, I think. But yeah.
Yeah, and then when you bring in the kind of antitia relationship between Sagittarius and Capricorn, there's this sharing of light that they have. You know, if we think of antitia as, like, the length of the day, Sagittarius, the end of Sagittarius and the beginning of Capricorn, and vice versa, like has equal amounts of light. And so there's this some kind of like shared relationship that these signs have, even though they're averse. Perhaps that's embodied in a way by their mutable, you know, Capricorn isn't considered a mutable sign, but their kind of double bodied nature, their need to be more than like what's expected of them, or more than meets the eye, or something like that. Their need for that kind of transfiguration or transformation. Awesome. Yeah, you spoke a little bit about Sun's and Saturn's like kind of signs opposing the signs of the luminaries. But I'm curious to hear a little bit more about what you think about your experience, what you think about the Sun in Capricorn. And I think it's just interesting, again, kind of speaking to aversions. If you have the Sun in Capricorn, that means by definition that the Sun is averse to the sign that it rules in your chart. And so like, what does that mean in your life? And, you know, how does that play out? How was that experienced?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think like the Sun in Capricorn is interesting, because it is like, because Capricorn is ruled by Saturn, and Saturn is in this opposition with the luminaries, like with Aquarius is actually opposite the sign of the Sun, and so there's this way that Aquarius can, you know, we think of Aquarius as this kind of like standing out, like by virtue of being like the outsider, but Capricorn opposes Cancer and opposes the Moon, and so there's this more hidden and more lunar quality perhaps, and less of a desire to stand out.
That's really interesting. I just want to point out like how some people will say that any aspect is better than an aversion, and how I think that with oppositions, like there is this kind of element of the opposing sign being contained in the sign. Like when someone is so alike, so similar to you, that like they're off-putting to you, you know what I mean? There's that interesting thing of like the Sun, you know, like we spoke about, it's so hot you can't get too close to it. And then there's this thing of like Aquarius, the stereotype being like, I'm so different, like you can't understand me, kind of thing. Which is very similar. And so it's interesting to think of Capricorn as like a lunar, having lunar qualities.
I definitely at least for me, find that the kind of solar Leo center of attention thing like has been a challenge for me, and has not been a place that I have been so comfortable. You know, even like if we take the like trumpet example, where like if we put the trumpet in like the Aquarius like fifth house place, like that is opposing Leo, and so that sort of makes sense. But like the way that I was trying to do it was not like I want to be the like solo person, you know, or playing in like a jazz trio or something. It was like, I want to be in a 90 person orchestra. I want to be all the way in the back. Like you're going to hear me, but you're not going to hear me as an individual. You're going to hear like the brass section as a whole unit. And then there's like a way that, you know, you can kind of like hide in that, like, you know, if you're a soloist and you make a mistake, people are going to know. If you're playing third trumpet in a 90-person orchestra and you make a mistake, most people probably aren't going to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that having the sun in Capricorn. And I think, like, I'm both, you know, talk about the house placement, I imagine more, but I imagine that my experience of my sun in Capricorn is influenced by my sun being in the fourth house and being in a very private space. Yeah, and I think that, like, what you're saying about the aversion between Capricorn and Leo, like, makes sense to me. Like, the sun in Capricorn doesn't quite know how to do the Leo thing, and like, because it's not an exact opposition, it also doesn't know how to, like, rebel against that. And I think, like, interestingly, like, in my personal life, I have actually a lot of Leos.
Interesting. And,
like, Leo risings in my life. Just, like, all over the place. And I think,
do you attribute that to it being your 11th and, like, the house of friendship in general, or?
I think that definitely is probably a big part of it. And I think, like, the other piece of it is, like, my mom and sister are both Leo risings, so I think that something that feels, like, kind of, like, familial about it. But I do think that there is, like, the kind of, like, Leo capacity to, like, radiate warmth and radiate kindness and generosity, that, like, I find appealing. And like, I think that there's, like, a level of, like, oh, I want to be like that. I want to be able to, like, not just know inside me that I, like, feel really warmly about these people. I want to be able to, like, say it out loud and like, share that. And here are these, like, examples of people who are able to just, like, you know, let out the sun's light. And so I think that there is some of that where it's like, oh, I have literally no idea how to do that. So I'm going to, like, put myself around these people who seem to, like, have a better idea of it.
Yeah, that's just interesting too, because it reminds me again, you know, like, are similar placements of Capricorn sun, Sag moon. It reminds me of your moon placement being in Sag, and the fire triplicity being the kind of, like, relational triplicity in your chart. It's kind of 11th, 7th, 3rd place. And it's just interesting that it's like the moon is a connector and you're like, I'm going to connect with these people. And, like, fate kind of served them up for you. It's your, you know, your parent and your sibling. So it's kind of inevitable. But it's just interesting, like, connecting to others as a way to learn. It feels very lunar. Amazing. Yeah, can you tell me a little bit more about the fourth house and how that the sun being in that place in your chart kind of you know, changes the flavor of your experience of your sun?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think some of the things that I have already said have kind of started, like, speaking to the fourth house. And I think, you know, I often wonder, like, as astrologers, like, how much are we able to actually, like, separate our understandings of, like, signs and planets with, like, our own individual placements.
It's a really interesting tension, yeah.
Yeah, like, I have a sense of, like, what Capricorn is, but it is, like, so and you know, it's based upon reading and learning from other astrologers and from other people who have these archetypes, but it is, like, also very much based on, like, who I am and my understanding of myself. And, like, I can't separate out Capricorn from the fourth house because that's part of who I am.
I think it's a reason why getting readings with, like, knowledgeable astrologers is actually really important, because you're able to, like, so much of astrology is dialogical. And so it's like, you know, your life experience the best. You know, it's like when we look at, like, a celebrity chart and we're like, this person is like X, Y, Z. It's like, we don't really know that person. Like, we know the public persona that they have, maybe some of the facts about their life, but like, we don't know them. So, you know, even a client, like they're the authority on their own life. But a lot of meaning and a lot of learning can be discovered, or can happen when that dialogue happens between the astrologer and the client, or what have you, where that, the placements are put in the context of like the lived experience.
But yeah, I guess to speak explicitly to the fourth house, so fourth house, family, home, lineage, land, it's you know, the place when the sun is the lowest in the sky, and so associated with privacy and home life. Yeah, and I think like certainly like home and family have always been very important to me. And I think like I also have Jupiter in Capricorn, which, you know, Jupiter's not so happy in Capricorn, but I think that there is that kind of, like, desire for like having a home space that feels like open and welcoming and where people can just come over and hang out and feel at home. And yeah, I think like the other piece of the fourth house that has kind of always felt important to me, and it's like then kind of been through the podcast that I have been like, oh, that's like where the fourth house really is for me, is like the archives. Where like I have always been interested in like my like position and relationship to a queer lineage and a kind of like
queer canon.
Yes, a queer canon,
like,
if you will.
Like an archive is kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and like just like a desire to have a kind of like devotional practice to my queer lineage archive canon. And to know it and be in relationship with it and be part of it. And also like interested in the like process of archiving and developing that lineage. And, you know, kind of like doing it in the Capricorn way of like concretizing it and bringing it into the like earthly realm. Like I love all sorts of like ephemera and like the like real material things of various queer lineages. And so kind of like collecting like old books or like for Christmas, one of the gifts that I received is a like copy of it's called like Gay Love Signs. I'm just gonna grab it.
Yeah, go for it.
That's right. Show the viewers. But like just this old book that is like a weird, beautiful material object that has all this like you know, kind of silly astrology stuff in it. But I just really love having the like physical object that both is like relevant to a queer lineage and to astrological lineage.
Yeah, that's super cool. And just, you know, just to point out, the fourth house is associated with like family and home, but it's also associated with the ancestors, like the physical ancestors. And I think with the importance of like chosen family in queer communities and spaces, like I've heard or seen a lot of queer people refer to people who are not related to them as like ancestors or as like a, you know, kind of past chosen family. And it just reminded me, what you're talking about just reminded me of just something interesting. Like I have a similar kind of interest in kind of old things. And I was reminded of, in a past life, I worked on a podcast professionally, and we had a guest during Pride Month who owned a bar in LA. It was like the first woman, like Black woman lesbian owned bar in LA. And there was a documentary about her on Netflix as well, but we had her on the podcast. And as part of the research for writing the episode, I looked at USC's like queer archive, and they had a map of where all of the gay bars and like queer bars existed in LA. And if you clicked on one, you could see like all of the, like there was an archive for each of them, if I remember correctly. And there was like old promotional flyers, which like I found really, really interesting. And just like really, really cool, just cool old stuff. So yeah, I think, I don't know why I'm being reminded of that, but yeah, it's just interesting. You know, we brought up EY earlier, and the idea of just like queering astrology and how our notions of certain things like ancestry can be expanded given the lived realities of communities or certain people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. And yeah, I love just the, like, I know there's not so far from me, there's this like archive, a queer archive, the sexual minorities archive. And it's just this like big old house that's like filled like several stories worth of like old books. There's like a whole like VHS and DVD section. There's pins.
Oh, cool.
There's zines. And there's also like all of this like just like posters from different like events and like dances and protests and like all sorts of stuff. And I feel like just like there's so much that you can learn like with like the like old flyers from these different places, where it's like, oh, I can imagine the like energy and the aesthetics and like who would have seen this and like how it looks or doesn't look like flyers for things now. And I feel like there's just like so much, I don't know, it feels more real and tangible.
Yeah, it's like that kind of psychic sense of like you touch something and you get all these things kind of evoked. You're like, oh, I can smell what the club smelled like, you know. Just by kind of looking at this old aesthetic. Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. To move on, I'm curious to hear about Saturn and their placement in your chart, if you can tell us a little bit about your Saturn.
Yes. So my Saturn is in Pisces, which we talked about a little bit at the beginning. And so I have a mutual reception between Saturn and Pisces and Jupiter and Capricorn. And they basically are in charge of everything else in my chart. So that's great. I think like the way that I have kind of understood like that relationship between the two of them is like there are two parts of me. One part just wants to have fun and ease and abundance, and the other part wants to work hard and be diligent. but each of those parts is working with the other one's tools. And so like the part that wants to have fun has to use the tools of hard work, and the part that wants to work hard has to use the tools of fun. And so I think a lot of my life has been spent kind of figuring out how to actually do that, because it like doesn't work so well for me to like sit down and just work and isolate and you know, do that the Saturn's way thing. And it doesn't work for me to like go out every night and have fun and have a super social time and drink in excess and like do the like Jupiter in Jupiter's way thing. And so kind of like integrating those two pieces has been an interesting challenge. That I imagine I will continue to be working with for all of my life. But I think with Saturn it being in Pisces, this is so one of the things that I learned in massage therapy school is about the concept of biotensegrity. And basically like that is just like a portmanteau of like biology, tension, and integrity. And basically like the way that we used to think about like human bodies was as a like continuous compression structure. So like you know, your shins are on top of your feet and your thighs are on top of your shins, and like hips and like your kind of like bones are stacked one on top of the other, like as if you were building a like brick house where you just put one brick on top of the other and you build layer by layer. But what various scientists and body workers and people who think and write and study bodies have kind of been coming to in the last 30, 50 years. I'm sure that many people and many cultures have come to this understanding prior to this point, but the concept of biotensegrity, which is the idea that rather than the body being like stacked one thing on top of the other, the body is held together by the like tension of the whole thing. And so rather than like your like arm bones being in place because like they are under your shoulder bone, like it's all one system that is held together by virtue of the like tension of the whole object. And so with that, like what that means is that like every part of you is connected to every other part of you. And the kind of like sciencey piece of that is that all throughout our body there is a like web of connective tissue called fascia. And it like wraps over like every single cell, every bundle of cells, like at every level there is fascia and it is all one single web. So rather than thinking about like your bones stacked on top of bones, it's like your bones are held in this giant web of fascia. And so like in the context of like massage therapy, like if you like are massaging someone's shoulder, it has impacts not just on their shoulder, but also on their hips and also on their feet. Mm-hmm. If you break your pinky, it has impacts not just on your pinky, but on your hand and on your arm and on your shoulder. And right. like all of a sudden you have a weird hip pain, even though you broke your pinky. Mm-hmm. All that to say, I think about Saturn being in its own signs as a kind of like continuous compression form, where Saturn in Pisces is that like biotensegrity or just tensegrity form of like there is a structure and like a well-formed structure, but it's not so clear and obvious and like in order. It's much more like the structure is that everything is connected, and anytime you touch one of the pieces, every other piece is also impacted. So I think that there is like, I don't know, I guess I'm seeing kind of like collectively with Saturn being in Pisces right now, and perhaps it's just like I'm in my Saturn return, and so I'm a little bit keyed into that at the moment. Yeah. But like, it seems like there is this like more collective awareness of like, oh, every time we touch something, the impact ripples out and ripples out and ripples out. And so every little thing that we do has impacts for all of us, which I think we're seeing both in kind of like the hellscape way and also in a like more beautiful, like mutual aid way. Yeah. And just like seeing people come together and show up to protests and like be in community. I don't know.
The first thing that comes to mind is I think, you know, the sixth house is like the house of illness, and therefore wellness is brought in there as well. So it's just interesting to hear you talk about the body so much with your Saturn placement in the sixth. And I think that Saturn there ruling a Capricorn sun feels very much like theories of body, which is not something I like think of very much, but it makes a lot of sense astrologically that like, you know, even this idea of like, what does it mean to be a body feels like kind of a foreign thing to think about for me, but, it makes so much sense, and it is an important question to consider, like, because it's one of the most fundamental things. Like, what does it mean to be in this body, and how do we navigate that? And how does our answer to that dictate a lot of other things that we do? So that's really thought provoking. And it's also just interesting to think about what you brought up about Saturn and Pisces. And, you know, if we think about like Saturn and Capricorn, you know, that comes to mind because I have Saturn and Capricorn. And it's like, if a sewer breaks in one place, you know, or a piece of infrastructure, it's kind of like a tangible thing that can easily be identified and easily, it's like, okay, there's a hole in that. We just fix the hole and then that's fine. It doesn't affect the rest of the system in a way. But there is something about like dropping the pebble in the water, or the question that comes to mind is like, where do the waves in the middle of the ocean come from? You know, it's like, that's not as clear. And it's like this idea of, dropping the pebble in the water and the, you know, the ripples moving out. It's like, once we do the thing, we can't control the consequences. And I think that you're kind of speaking to that of, you know, the water is not, you know, once it gets in motion, it can't be stopped, which feels distinct from Capricorn in the sense, you know, of like that kind of discrete material element of Capricorn. So that's just something I think it's just really interesting to consider. And I think that it is, as you said, an important thing to consider with Saturn being in Pisces right now and continuing to be there for the next few years.
I mean, I guess one lesson that I learned just from massage therapy with that is one of my teachers, one of the things that they would say is every time you touch, you treat. And I think that is something we can kind of use from Saturn in Pisces, is that I think it can be very overwhelming to have everything be interconnected. But if everything is connected, then working on someone's hand, if they have a big shoulder injury, it might not seem like it's doing anything, but it actually does. Those waves will ripple, and that healing will happen. And so, with on a larger scale, it may not seem like doing a small thing could possibly impact the whole web. But because it is all connected, those waves will kind of ripple out. And
it's good to remember, the good or bad, whether it's a negative action or a positive action, those ripples move out. And I think it's definitely something I need to hear right now, that the small gestures that we make are not for naught. That, small gestures can accumulate to bigger things. So thank you for that. Let's talk about your sun and any of the aspects it makes. Is there any aspects your sun makes that you think would be important to discuss?
My sun is not the most, because everything in my chart is pretty condensed into one section. It doesn't make a ton of aspects. It is very close to being exactly conjunct both Neptune and Mercury retrograde. So Mercury retrograde is not close enough that I get the Kazemi, and instead get a very combust retrograde Mercury. I think with the close conjunction with Neptune and with Mercury retrograde, that has kind of manifested as having a very hard time kind of defining myself and communicating who I am for a very long time. And having a hard time knowing what I like and knowing what I want, knowing what I need. And I think probably also part of that is that it's all in Capricorn, and there is this association with Capricorn about old age and kind of taking a longer time to kind of get to the meat of it.
Yeah. It's a fine wine element to Capricorn.
Yes.
Getting better with age, I hope.
Yes, please. I think interestingly, so by secondary progression, my Mercury recently, just in this past year, secondary progress Mercury was conjunct my natal Mercury, was retrograde, turned direct when I was 7 or something, and then finally made it back to the position of my natal Mercury. And it has been in this past year that I have like started making a podcast and like putting it out into the world. And yeah, so I think that there's like
that's
some
cool.
Yeah, level of like, oh, okay, I found my voice in some capacity.
Nice. And you're having that Capricorn year this year too. So like your sun and Capricorn are also activated. So that's really interesting too.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the sun also rules my lot of spirit. So, you know, can't see the lot, but I have been trying to deepen my relationship with the sun in order to be able to take action and kind of enact the lot of spirit.
Awesome. Yes. So with that, I'm just curious if you could offer some suggestions to people who are like new to astrology or planetary relationship in forming or initiating a relationship with the sun. Like, what have you been doing to kind of deepen that relationship?
Yeah. I mean, I think like the like kind of joking, kind of not joking, but like wearing sunscreen has been a, as of like the last year or two, daily practice for me. And I think like, you know, in discussions of like whether or not the sun is malefic, like I think that wearing sunscreen can kind of help stave off of some of the more maleficness of the sun. But I think also like just like tracking the sun's conjunction to natal planets as like moments where those planets are given kind of like the stage to shine. And like using that as like, because for me, I have an easier time connecting with some of my other planets, like using that as a way to like look back at the sun. Yeah. And then I think also just, I have been tracking my eclipses more closely and kind of like watching the stories of the eclipses play out. Like both because they tend to be pretty loud and pretty obvious, and also like they're fairly contained in terms of like, you know, you get a year and a half maybe worth of a story. Yeah, so
cool. I think awesome. Yeah. And I'm just reminded of the suggestion that people had in the moon series of like, just go out and look at the moon. And I think I'd say the same thing for the sun. And I'm just kind of adding this because I experienced this today of I've been kind of tired today. And so I've been, you know, just resting a lot of the day, but I went and took my dog for a walk around sunset. And I was just like, even here in New York, it's like, you know, maybe 30, 40 degrees. It's quite cold, but still like the sun shines on and creates beautiful like colors in the sky and beautiful light and lets off this warmness that you can really feel even through the cold. And so I think that that's a particularly potent thing, especially in these kind of Saturnian seasons of Capricorn and Aquarius season, where it's quite cold in my location and, you know, to kind of still experience the warmth that the sun has to give off and what that means for the winter, I think is important.
Yeah, a little bit of sunshine can really go a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, I think for a lot of people, like seasonal affective disorder, it's like a lack of vitamin D, which we get from the sun, and it's just also a lack of sunlight. And so it just reminds me of how you know, again, like the sun is not this thing that we can like touch, but it's so important for our well-being and our, the continuation of our life and our vitality. And so experiencing that is just really, really essential. So just wanted to offer that. But before we go, is there anything that you want to add? Do you have any imparting thoughts about the sun?
No, I think
we did it.
Yeah. Thank
you. Awesome. Wonderful. Thank you. Where can we find you? And is there anything that you're working on that you'd like to let us know about?
Yeah. So I'm on the internet. I have a website that has information about my consulting practice as well as my podcast. And that is stargazeastrology.ghost.io. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter is EH Astrology and Instagram is Ellie Higgins Astro, just to keep it complicated. And yeah, I do some natal and year ahead consulting. And I am and will keep working on the podcast. My plan for 2024 is to, it's been a little loosey goosey, but the plan is to kind of actually follow the sun this year and do one episode each month with about someone who is that particular sun sign. So
cool.
Capricorn episode will be out shortly.
Amazing. Can you disclose who you're doing this month?
Yes, I'm doing Susan Sontag, who is
amazing.
So truly Capricornian.
We all love Susan Sontag. Like Oscar and I talked about Susan Sontag on the last episode too. One of my favorite, I was supposed to mention this on that episode because Oscar talks about Susan Sontag all the time, but one of my favorite books of essays is called Under the Sign of Saturn, mm-hmm. which is a book that she wrote about Walter Benjamin, who mm-hmm. famously is like a Saturnian. And on the front cover, I would grab it, but I don't want to like unplug all my stuff. On the front cover of the book is this huge oak tree, like massive oak tree. And yeah, I don't know. I love that book of essays and her kind of treatment of Walter Benjamin as a person who liked older, unconventional ways of thinking that were like outside of the kind of intellectual status quo of the time. Mm-hmm. Therefore, like he kind of spoke astrologically, but is like maybe one of the most important intellectual figures of the 20th century, Walter Benjamin. So I'm excited for that.
I think it will be good. She really captures Capricorn in a way that I admire. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I'll definitely be on the lookout for that. All right, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on today. It was wonderful talking with you, and I hope to chat with you again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, SP. It's been really wonderful.
To support the show by donating or becoming a member, please visit my website, which is linked in the show notes. And please subscribe to the show wherever you listen. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter. See those links in the show notes as well. If you have any questions or feedback on the show, please feel free to contact me via my website or email me at sbalhorary@gmail.com. In the show notes, you can also find links to astrologers and resources that we touched on in this episode. Thanks for listening to the show. I'll see you next time.